Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Ahead on the show today, musician, producer, and songwriter Linda Perry talks about her rise to fame in the 90s with the band Four Non Blondes, her uncanny hit-making abilities, and her new TV show. Plus, Ben Watt, formerly of Everything But the Girl, has a new solo album. He'll play songs from it, backed by guitarist Bernard Butler, formerly of the band Suede. But before we do that, this week we kicked off a month-long look at the summer of 94, and we've been asking you, where were you that summer 20 years ago, and what were you listening to? You can call us at 866-939-1612 or post your story at soundcheck.org. The number again is 866-939-1612, and joining us with an update and maybe sharing a story of his own from the summer of 94 is Soundcheck executive producer Joel Meyer. Hey, Joel.
Hey, John.
So, what have we got?
We've got some really interesting stuff. John, 1994 was a great year. We did this exercise last year, you might recall, John.
I recall.
With a little project called The Summer of 1993. we really haven't reinvented the
wheel. I detect a trend
here. Yes, and it went so well last year that we had to do it with 1994. And the fun part of this project is specifying the summer, May through September. And that's always a really special time for people. As you'll find out in a little bit, it can be a time of transition, as in my own case. But let's talk a little bit about what people are posting about the summer of 1994 on soundcheck.org and on Facebook, where Jennifer responded appropriately in all caps saying, 20 years, whoa. Totally understandable reaction.
Yep.
Annalisa on Facebook posted Ace of Base, specifically the song The Sign, was on heavy rotation. To be fair, I was in Brazil and my cousins were obsessed with American pop. Annalisa, there are no judgments here on Soundcheck. Ace of Base is just fine as a response.
And that, in fact, was the answer to one of our quiz questions at our Radio Love Fest quiz about the summer of 94 with Wyatt Cenac and a couple of audience members. And if you missed that, you can find it on our website at soundcheck.org. What else?
Well, let's actually hear some music. Let's hear a few of the picks that people have posted.
All right, now wait a minute, Joel.
Oh, man, it's like the internet doesn't even exist, John. That music sounds so good.
Jungle Boogie?
Jungle Boogie, right.
Summer of 94?
Summer of 94. The reason this made the list is because that song, originally recorded in the 70s, I believe, by Kool and the Gang, made it on the Pulp Fiction soundtrack, which was released in September 1994, thus qualifying for our window of May through September. That came from Roddick at, and I might butcher this, Masaryk University in Brno in the Czech Republic.
And we also heard a little bit of Black Hole Sun from Soundgarden.
That album, Super Unknown, was mentioned by a bunch of different people. That was like an important record for many in our audience. And at the top, John, we heard the Beastie Boys and their song Sabotage, which is not only just a great song, but it inspired what I think is one of the funniest music videos that's ever been produced by director Spike Jonze.
So all of these being suggested by some of our listeners as things that were important to them in that summer 20 years ago. I remember listening to Black Hole Sun.
It was everywhere.
A lot.
It was all over, like, big rock radio.
Yeah. What about you, Joel? What were you listening to?
Well, John, I'm so glad that you asked. Let's hear what I was listening to.
On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
So Nick Cave.
Let Love In by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
What a surprise.
It's well known among the staff, my affection for Nick Cave. By this point in 1994, I was already a big fan. All of my friends in high school were a big fan. We were sort of a dark clothes-wearing clique that wandered the hall and had rejected such sellouts as Nirvana and Soundgarden. And so this album came out in April. It's a little bit earlier than our window. But the important thing here is that Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds played on the lineup of Lollapalooza that summer, which came through my hometown, the Twin Cities. And my friends and I saw him live. It was really fantastic. But what's more important, you know, the part of the question, John, is what were you doing at that time?
So what were you doing at that time, Joel?
I'm glad you asked, John. I just graduated from high school, and I was a little directionless. And a fateful meeting with Nick Cave the day after the show and something he said to me was really, really important to me and may have changed my life, John, just to use a cliche.
Wow.
But you can read more about it on the Soundcheck blog at soundcheck.org. You can read my story about meeting Nick Cave and what happened. It's there on soundcheck.org.
Anybody else?
One more. This is from Jeb, who is from Fairlawn, New Jersey. Jeb was a sophomore in high school, so had plenty of time to work out what he was going to do for the rest of his life. Jeb was listening to what he calls a heavy rotation of Pearl Jam, 311, Bad Religion, A Tribe Called Quest, and Phish. And John, I'm not a really big fan of some of those bands, but again, no judgments here.
This is a safe place.
It's a safe place.
All right, well, here's a little bit from Phish and a live recording from the Merriweather Post Pavilion in Maryland of the song Sample in a Jar.
It's hidden far away, but someday I may tell the tale of metal tangle when into your world I fell. Without you now I wander soaking, secretly afraid. But in your grasp the fears don't last, though some of them have stayed.
So Jeb in Fairlawn, New Jersey, was listening to Phish and other things 20 years ago. Now you know what our executive producer Joel Meyer was doing 20 years ago. You can find out what the rest of us were doing. That's on our website as well, soundcheck.org. And tell us your story at soundcheck.org or by calling us and leaving us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. Up next...
Could you be dead? You always were two steps ahead.
Back in 1994, Ben Watt was still half of the much-loved English duo called Everything But the Girl. Now a well-known DJ, producer, and solo artist, Ben's going to join us to play some songs from his new solo record, and he's bringing a friend along, Bernard Butler, formerly of the band Suede, and they'll play live in our studio next. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The singer and songwriter Ben Watt spent much of the 1980s and 90s as half of the duo Everything But the Girl. The other half was his longtime partner, now wife, Tracy Thorne. In his three decades plus of making music, Watt has explored a huge range of jazz, electronic, and folk sounds, and he somehow managed to merge all of this into his first solo album in 30 years. It's called Hendra, and it features guitar work from another accomplished British musician, Bernard Butler, who's joining Ben Watt here in our Soundcheck studio for some live playing. They're going to start us off with the title track from the album Hendra by Ben Watt.
Thank you.
winds are cold but heavenly, and the sun is shining. You know what they say about silver and lining. I'd studied harder now, made something of myself. But instead I'm just a shopkeeper, but I mustn't blame myself. Oh, Hendra, oh, Hendra, there's still so much to gain. Self-help books, like the dance with life, like the feel the fear and do it anyway. Sometimes I have them right here in my hand and think it's easier for you to say. Must allow these feelings and just let them fall. But sometimes I turn the radio up so loud just to drown them all. Oh, Hendra, oh, Hendra, where love is playing. As wrong as rain.
That is Ben Watt and his song Hendra, title track from his solo album, also called Hendra, which is out now. Ben singing and playing guitar with Bernard Butler, also playing guitar live here in the studio. Ben formerly of Everything But the Girl, Bernard formerly of the Brit rock band Suede, and the two of them playing for us here some new songs by Ben Watt. And first of all, Ben, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much.
We often will hear bands who, you know, do a full-on electric record and then they'll come in here and strip down and do solo acoustic and stuff. You've gone the opposite direction because that's a very acoustic kind of sound on the record.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Me and Bernard just switch around the guitars. We try, you know, different interpretations. We've just really enjoyed playing with each other. There's another track on the album that began on a 12-string guitar, went on to a semi-acoustic electric, has gone back onto acoustic for this tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's just exploring, you know, what the songs can say, not only through the lyrics, but through the musicianship that we put onto it as well.
Right, which is often the mark of a good song when it has that versatility, when it can be sort of presented in many different ways.
Right, well, that's nice of you to say so.
So is Hendra a person? A place, a thing? What's Hendra?
It's exactly the same question I asked myself when I first heard the word. I mean, I wondered if it was mythological, if it was...
Where did you hear the word?
Well, it's actually a word my sister used to use for the place she used to try and get away to. She had a tough life, and she ended up working in a corner store. And at weekends, she tried to get away to the country, and she used to take this place. And when she died at the end of 2012, unexpectedly, which was a big blow for everybody, I looked into it. And Hendra was not only the name of the road on which the house was located, but was also an old Cornish word in Cornwall for home or farmstead.
Oh.
And for me, the whole, you know, sort of mixture of those three things, its lyrical quality, the connection with my sister, its meaning, seemed really evocative to me. And it became the title of the song, which is meant to be sung in her voice. It's not really my voice that's singing. This slightly unworldly voice singing about dreams but hang-ups at the same time.
And the fact that it's a word from what is essentially a dead language, Cornish. Mm. I mean, nobody speaks Cornish anymore.
Well, you should be careful what you say, because people do, actually. So.
Well, there's been like a movement to kind of revive the language, I think.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as a kind of...
Yeah, well, there's talk that Cornwall might even, if Scotland succeed in seceding from the UK, Cornwall could be next. So.
Really?
Well, I mean, that's hypothetically speaking.
Yeah, all right. It is a very evocative song and an evocative term. And it's been, what, 31 years since you launched your career with a solo record. Obviously, you've done so many things in between. At what point did you realize... I'm writing a solo record. I mean, you've written books, you know, memoirs, autobiography. At what point did you realize, I guess I'm doing a solo record?
Well, it's something that's been in my mind for a very, very long time. I mean, I was a precocious teenager with a record deal when I was 19 or 20. I had an emerging career. I'd had the temerity to call up people like Robert Wyatt to work with me, even though nobody knew who I was.
And Robert Wyatt said yes.
And Robert Wyatt said yes, much against the record company's expectations.
And for folks in America who don't know Robert Wyatt, a kind of one-of-a-kind British...
I mean, a kind of alt-folk jazz legend, really, who had his most famous incarnation in Soft Machine, but then went solo and made some amazingly experimental records in the 70s.
Right.
But at that point, when I was still very young, I chose to go in with Tracy, obviously, into Everything But The Girl, a project that was meant to last a couple of months, and it lasted 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of being a solo performer has been in the back of my mind for a very long time, and that voice has been at times loud and at times quiet. But just more recently, it's got louder, and I felt that I needed to confront it at some point. And when I finished the book I've written recently, Romany and Tom, which is a portrait of my parents, the person that most wanted to show it to and who most wanted to read it was my half-sister, Jenny. And her death at the end of 2012 kind of triggered these songs. And all of the songs for Hendra were actually pretty much written out of compulsion at the beginning of 2013. It's not like I had a stockpile of 31 years of songs. It was just, now is the moment I'm inspired to do this.
Hmm. The album's called Hendra, from my guest Ben Watt, who's with us here in the Soundcheck studio. And... you mentioned the latest book, Romany and Tom, about your parents. Your earlier book, Patient, was about your own battle with an autoimmune disease. When you are writing songs that strike close to home, that come from family, from home, from, you know, living with a wife and kids and stuff, does that line blur between memoir and song lyric?
I don't know. I always just try and write truthfully, and things that strike me strongly and I feel I would like to express, I then sort of double check myself in as unsentimental a way as possible and say, look, does this have meaning for other people? Because if it's just self-expression without communication, then it becomes self-indulgent.
Right.
But I'm just interested in a kind of common consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to find the things where people go, wow, you know, that's me in that song as well. And that's my ambition, I think, both in my writing, however personal it gets, and my songwriting. And I don't shy away from subjects. I mean, I've written about my depression in my new book. I wrote about being very exposed in hospital in my first book. And, you know, I've sung openly about the death of my sister and my father and stuff, so. But in all of it, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm trying to present this kind of gloomy, melancholy outlook on the world, because what I'm saying is we all have these moments of crisis that come at us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about our resilience and how we get over these moments. You know, what weapons do we use to fight this stuff that comes at us?
And for you, is songwriting one of those weapons?
Well, not just that. That's the method. What I mean is, you know, what are the actual parts of our life that we use? Do we use resilience? Do we use disdain? Do we use anger? Do we combat, you know, these blows in life with humor?
Mm-hmm.
And I think all the characters in the songs on the new record particularly use these different weapons. They're at moments of conflict in their life.
Mm-hmm.
How do they cope, you know?
The next song called Golden Ratio, I mean, the golden ratio is, or the golden mean, as some people have called it. You know, people have ascribed a kind of mystical significance to that as kind of, you know, a way of balancing the universe, balancing yourself, anything.
Yeah.
I mean, was any of that in your mind when you wrote this song?
Well, I mean, the song is, it's quite a simple song. I mean, when I get away from London, I go down to a very beautiful part of England called Dorset and go for long walks up on the cliffs. And it's an area of intense natural beauty. But the song is about experiencing both that, but also that little voice in our mind that means we are unable to appreciate beauty, even when it's in front of us.
Mm.
Something still niggles away, something existentialist. We may yearn for this golden ratio, this moment of transcendence, if you like, but somehow, you know, our voice...
It's elusive.
Yeah, and our voice won't let us do it and makes fun of us. And that's what the song is about. So.
All right. Well, you want to play it for us?
Yeah, give us a second. I'll just go over to the guitar.
Okay. Ben Watt here with me in the Soundcheck studio. Bernard Butler also strapping on a guitar for this performance as well. The song is called Golden Ratio. Here's a live performance. Thank you.
the beat of my own metronome. Yeah, let my fingers brush the gauze. So give me salt lips for a seahorse. I want no regrets and no remorse. I wanna see life as its own resource, because I've seen these birds as they wheel below. I've seen these paws under winter snow. Let me come, don't let me go. I want a momentary golden, golden, golden ratio. Let me imagine that it was me. Cause I truly imagine that it was me. I was flung open, I was alive. I was flung open, I was alive, 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 alive. Yes, it was me. Oh, yeah. Because it was me. It was me. Yes, it was me. Oh, let it be me.
Once again, that is Ben Watt live on Soundcheck with a song called Golden Ratio. You'll find it on Ben's solo record called Hendra. For this next song, Ben's going to move to the piano. It's called Spring. Again, you'll find it on the new album called Hendra. But here, once again, a live performance with Bernard Butler on guitar, Ben Watt at the piano with Spring.
Just seem to linger over the hillside, and the light is gone by four, and the mornings break so cold. Anyone in their right mind might feel old. My love, we're real. My love. It's not over. It's not over. We break the water on the lake with every soft move that we make. Thank you. I am the king. And you can be the one who shines. My love, it's real. My love, it's not over.
Song is called Spring, live performance on Soundcheck from singer, songwriter, and pianist Ben Watt at our piano. Bernard Butler still on electric guitar here in the studio with Ben. They perform together on the album Hendra, which is Ben Watt's first solo effort in over 30 years.
31.
31 years. With all the stuff that happened in between. How did you and Bernard get put together?
We ran into each other by chance about 2 years ago at a mutual friend's barbecue in the pouring rain, typical
English
summer. And we just stood around moaning, basically, like English people do. And we both seemed to have come to this point where we wanted to get out and perform and play guitar again, like our first love, if you like. I just really wanted him as a lead guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to play these open-tuned, quite beautiful, impressionistic sounds, while he did the kind of gritty, overdriven, bluesy, darker stuff.
Now, you mentioned open tuning. It did strike me when you were playing Hendra, watching your fingers, I was like, I don't know what chords those are. So you were playing that in an alternate tuning.
Yeah, almost every song on the record is not in normal tuning now, so... They're all kind of unique finger shapes for each song.
Yeah. So you have to kind of relearn the instrument for every song.
Yeah, but it makes it intriguing again. It's like a new technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I look back over my career, I've often been most inspired where I've had a chance to sit down at something new, whether it's samplers, whether it's sequencers, whether it's new tunings on a guitar.
Right.
And it's not dissimilar to Beethoven, who in his lifetime, they invented the grand piano. And at one point, somebody must have walked him over from the harpsichord and said, hey, Ludwig, check this out, and sat him down, and he must have gone clang.
Right.
And he thought, wow, what is this? And, no wonder he wrote the Fifth Symphony.
You can hear the progression in his piano sonatas. Yeah. The first ones are very well behaved, and then they get increasingly kind of dynamic.
Well, it's like he invented heavy metal, really,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to put it.
Yeah.
It's been great having you and Bernard playing here in the Soundcheck studio today,
guys.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Some nights I drive out on the levels, through the village, past the church where we got married. And I can see for miles. And out there is the future, but what's this standing in my way? Right now it's my past, and it's not moving far.
We started the show by asking where you were in the summer of 94, a project we're running on soundcheck.org. Well, in that summer 20 years ago, Linda Perry was still riding the wave of her previous year's smash hit single with her band Four Non Blondes. But today, Linda Perry's career in the music industry is full of hits for other people and a TV show. We'll talk with her next. This is Soundcheck. Yeah. Many people remember Linda Perry as the frontwoman of the band Four Non Blondes and their massive 1993 hit What's Up. But in the two decades since then, Perry has had a hugely successful career, largely behind the scenes, as a producer and songwriter for artists like Pink, Christina Aguilera, Alicia Keys, and many more. Now she's got a new TV show, Make or Break, The Linda Perry Project. It premieres on July 16th on VH1, and Linda Perry joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Good to see you.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So, The Linda Perry Project, how did you go about picking the musicians who would be a part of this project with you?
Well, the concept was to find people that wouldn't need someone like me. And if they did, it would be simply to help them have breakthroughs emotionally, because to me, that's the issue I'm starting to see. Well, not starting. I've been seeing that there's no emotional connection, you know, with the artist. They're just kind of putting it out there. And, you know, I'm old school. I want to see some heart. I want to feel that energy. I want to feel that vibe. So when I was looking for artists, I basically talked to friends, their friends. We put it out word of mouth. So things came to me from other musicians, from other people, so-and-so, instead of doing like a casting call, which, you know, that's just going to bring people who are actors, and American Idol can have those people.
Right.
You know, this was all from friends and musicians.
So these are musicians who have, they're not signed, but they've been playing, they have established bands, maybe some of them have, you know, followers, fans. And
yeah, I mean, they have, you know, that part wasn't, I don't care about how many followers you have. That's not, you know, I mean, the truth is a label is going to sign artists based on how many followers they're going to have, and will pass up a really great artist because they don't have enough. So
right.
I'm not going to get involved in that, but, you know, there were some that I felt like, oh, this is where, you know, because my strength really is not as a songwriter, not as a producer, but I'm really good with people. Like, I'm really good with helping people go to another level emotionally. It's something I have. People trust me with their emotions, and that's what I bring to the table.
Well, and you also have a reputation as a straight shooter, and early on in the program, when you meet the, I don't want to call them the contestants, but when you meet the, you know, the musicians who are in the project with you, you sort of lay it out for them in this clip from the show, Make or Break, The Linda Perry Project.
Wake up, everybody!
Hi.
Hi, I'm Linda. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the Linda Perry Project. Look, here's the deal. If you're in this room right now, it's because I think you're amazing. But I'm not gonna lie. There's something missing from each and every one of you. You guys have been playing a long time, right? And you haven't gotten to the next level yet, right?
Not yet.
You might not be edgy enough. You might be playing the wrong kind of music, you know? It's about you and I figuring out why. I'm aggressive, I'm not gonna lie. I wanna see emotion, because that's what I miss in music today, is that real, raw emotion. Obviously, you guys are all here for a reason. I'm looking to find some talent for my label. What's at stake is me. I'm the one that is putting my credibility on the line here. And in order to have a successful label, I have to have great, talented artists. So the first thing I'm going to do is work with each of you in my studio. I need to see if you really have what it takes. I have high expectations, and most of you are not going to make it. That's about as honest as I'm going to get.
That's a clip from Make or Break, The Linda Perry Project, which premieres on July 16th on VH1. So, you know, you tell them right up front, most of you are not going to make it. But this is not an American Idol thing, right? There doesn't just have to be one person left standing.
No, no. Honestly, the whole intention was I just wanted to be able to put in my two cents into the music business. And I've been behind the scenes for a long time. And there's a certain way that I work, my process. That's all. Doesn't mean it's the process to use. It's just mine. So what I was just simply trying to tell these guys is, like, some of you aren't going to make it because you're not going to be able to go to the next level with me and connect with me if you don't allow yourself to be vulnerable and let go of all this crap that you've been learning from YouTube and American Idol or whatever, wherever it's coming from. But talented kids, they just, I could already tell the moment I walked in, you know.
Yeah.
Where
work to do.
There was going to be some stuff to do.
So in the show, there's some, you know, clashes of personality and ego. There's yelling, lots of people crying, even you at least one point. I mean, is that a part of just doing a reality TV show, or is it a function of getting to that emotional place that you're talking about?
I opened my mouth, and 18 days later, I shut it. Okay, so, and the cameras followed me around. That's about as edited as we got. You know, there was no me, you know, like I think one time the producer said, I missed that. Can you do that again? And I looked at him and he's like, I know, you know, because I told him one of the first things, if you miss something, you missed it. I'm not an actor. Don't try to get me to recreate it or restate it. You know, it's not going to happen. And so they learned very quick. You know, I'm pushing these kids. I'm pushing them, and I'm trying to get some stuff. And we have issues. That's why we hide them, you know, and we bury them. And I'm not good about just letting things go. I start going after it. And there's a couple situations where I was shocked at the story that came out because I was like, oh, my God, you can't write this. Like, did everybody hear that? Like, did that really happen?
So these young musicians that you have on the show, do they remind you of yourself when you were getting, I mean, they're probably about the age when you were starting to work professionally.
Well, John, it can't work that way because when I was younger, I was flyering. I was out on the street. I wanted to bring them to a rehearsal studio and we did something there because I was like, we walk in, I'm like, some of you don't know, but this is called a rehearsal studio. You've probably never seen one or been in one because what do? We pick up our guitars, we get and put our camera or our computer, we write some hunky-dunky song and go, I want to be famous, so I'm going to put it out on YouTube. Now, all of a sudden, they're famous. They're being, because something they did, and now they're being put into a big recording studio, all this stuff thrown at them, and they don't know who they are. They have no idea.
So for every Justin Bieber for whom that scenario actually has worked,
yes,
and made them famous, you've got thousands of people trying to do the same thing. Is it your hope?
I think it's sad. To me, it's a sad situation in the music. And you know what? In the entertainment business. Let's go broader. In society.
So it seems like, again, to get back to what you were saying, that you're missing this kind of emotional core in the music. It seems like a lot of pop music, top 40 music especially, there are things that signify emotion. You know, the big brassy chorus, you know, with the singer belting out at the top of her lungs. That's supposed to say, I'm being emotional.
I'm feeling.
Yeah. Whereas,
oh, I love that. I never really looked at it that way.
But that's not necessarily real emotion, is it?
No. No, and to me, okay, here's a perfect example of someone who would be relevant to like what is going on right now. Someone who didn't write a song, but was singing someone else's song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Karen Carpenter.
Okay.
Here's a woman that when she sang,
Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near? Just like me, they long to be close to you. Why?
I mean, the cheesiest lyrics, but you want to cry. Like, she takes those cheesy words and turned it into something that you're like, it's like it turned into this deeper thing because her voice and her emotions, like she was really putting it out there because she hid everything else, but let it come out of her voice.
We're speaking with Linda Perry, the musician, songwriter, producer. The TV show is called Make or Break, The Linda Perry Project. It premieres on July 16th at 10 p.m. on VH1. And I mean, to go back to, you know, where you were when you were at the stage that these young musicians are at, when Four Non Blondes was producing that record in, I guess it was 92, you say at one point in the show, you know, I was in a band called Four Non Blondes, it was really fun, but you've also been on record as saying you didn't like that record, that album, the sound of the album.
I hated it.
Why?
I didn't like it because it didn't sound like me. Like that girl, I just say that girl, she drives me crazy. She's just like singing like, you know, at 11 the whole time through because that's what the producer kept telling me to do. And no depth, no anything. She's like, keep doing that. And then I would question sounds and he would say, can't you just be a singer? You know, I'm like, no, I can't This is my career. And so anyways, you know, Four Non Blondes, if it wasn't for Four Non Blondes, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. So I'm so grateful, thankful for it, and I appreciate every moment. And I had to go through that, you know, because I learned a lot. But I can't bear standing listening to that record because it sounds really bad to my ears.
What about the song Drifting, though?
I love Drifting, but again, sonically, it's really high. It's like, it sounds very, like it's not warm. Like when I'm performing that song, it has a lot of body around it. It's warm. It just feels more natural. And the way David Tickle did it, it's good. There's like this high frequency going through. Like he just needed to pull that out.
So music made and mastered for the radio as opposed to the listener at home.
Yeah.
Let me give you an idea of what Linda Perry's talking about. This is from the Four Non Blondes record, the song called Drifting.
What a wonderful hesitation. Who would bear to feel sorry for me? Drop another pill just to calm me. Collapsed to my knees and fell fast asleep. And there was drifting way out into the sunshine, expecting to catch me now.
A little bit of the song Drifting from Four Non Blondes featuring Linda Perry grimacing in pain here in the Soundcheck studio.
I'm listening to it and I'm going, what is she doing? Like, what is that character? Like, you know, like, but I'm young, you know, I'm discovering my voice. And,
right.
But, you know, instead of getting, like, if that girl walked into my studio, I'd instantly say, hey, kid, lose the character.
Well, now this was going to be my question to you is like, did the young Linda Perry need the 2014 Linda Perry to come in there and...
Totally, and that's what I was expecting, you know, a producer to do because that's what I heard they did. And I never got anything except for, you know, get up there. And then I would go get that girl in here. I want to meet her because I can tell she's got a great voice, but she's got to tone it back down a little bit, you know, because it's a beautiful song. That song is... It's probably one of my favorite songs I've ever written, but when I play it today, it's a completely different sounding song. It just has more emotion.
The people you're working with on the show, on Make or Break, you know, they're very different types of music.
Yeah, because I love that. I mean, I was brought up, my father listened to Frank Sinatra and Willie Nelson, and my mom listened to Brazil 66, Sergio Mendes, Carmen Miranda. My brothers were into the rock and roll. My sister loved Beach Boys and the Letterman and, you know, stuff like that. And so, and then I loved Disney. Like, the Jungle Book was like, there was no better musical in my mind than the Jungle Book. So
Louis Prima. Good stuff in there.
Yeah. So I was brought up with all the style of music. And I actually never started buying my own music until I was probably 18.
A couple of years ago, you had not a solo record, but kind of a band project called Deep Dark Robot.
Yeah.
Is that how you hear your voice as a songwriter now?
Well, the truth about that was I was going crazy over this girl that was making me insane. And so I started writing these songs. I didn't intend to make an album. I just started writing these songs, and I was like, these can't go anywhere. And they had different flavors, different characters. My voice, because now my voice just can do anything I want it to do, and I just go on how it feels. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm writing an album about this chick. And so I was like, okay, you know what? For the hell of it, I'm going to call it 8 Songs About a Girl. I'm going to put a band together called Deep Dark Robot, and I'm going to go and tour it and get out of the studio, because maybe that's what I need to do.
Well, let's hear a little bit from Deep Dark Robot featuring Linda Perry in a song called Can't Get You Out of My Mind. Believe that's the same person that we heard in the Four
right?
Non-Blondes.
Now that to me is sexy. Like, I can listen to that and be really proud of it. And again, mind you, it's not that I'm not proud of what I've done, you know, in the past with Four Non-Blondes. I actually am very proud. But this, it sounds more like me and who I've become.
Mm-hmm. Linda Perry with Deep Dark Robot, the band that she put together to do this collection called 8 Songs About a Girl, and that's one of them called Can't Get You Out of My Mind. And so a couple of years before Beyoncé released her album with a video for each song, you did the same thing for this.
Oh, yeah. So, I was like, well, why stop here? I went on tour. I did this. Well, let me make a video for every song and just put it out there for fun, because it was a really fun project for me, and it really got me out of my own head. And so, yeah.
So when it happens that you write a song and it doesn't turn into a $3,000 video, but becomes like a massive global hit, like, you know, Beautiful for Christina Aguilera or a song for Pink.
Yeah.
You know, do you think of that differently in the act of writing, or is it all in retrospect? Do you think, oh, that was a hit and this is like me doing my little...
Oh, I don't know. You know, honestly, I wrote Beautiful. Beautiful was just the same way I've written every other song. It's just, you know, I was having a vulnerable moment, and I wrote it, and Get the Party Started. I was just, you know, tired of being so serious mm-hmm. and thinking that art could only come from pain, you know? And so I wrote a song that just basically was so opposite of what I felt. It really was just more of an experiment for me.
Linda Perry with me in the Soundcheck studio. Her TV show is Make or Break, The Linda Perry Project, premiering July 16th on VH1. We were talking before, Linda, about the Deep Dark Robot project. At around that time, there was word of you doing a Broadway musical. Is that still in the works?
Well, I'm bummed out about that. That's why I don't like talking about things that aren't happening yet. I was working on this musical, To Die For, and the director and producer, he got very sick. So it's been on a hiatus right now. It's been put on hold. And I feel horrible for him, because I love him and his wife, and they were the team, you know, that were putting this together. But it is a dream of mine to do a musical, because I believe I have a great one in me, because I am so visual when I write. And so I'm not going to give up that I'm going to do a musical. It just may not be the one I started.
Right. Well, and in the meantime, there is the little matter of the TV series. The title Make or Break could refer to you.
Yeah, it does refer to me in a very big way. But you'll have to watch the show to get that.
All right.
I'm not going to give it to you, man.
The series starts on July 16th, 10 p.m. on VH1. Make or Break, The Linda Perry Project. Linda Perry, great to have you with us on
Thank
Soundcheck.
Thank you very much for having me.
Staring at the cracks in the walls, 'cause I'm waiting for it all.
Tomorrow, we'll mark Independence Day by looking back to the Freedom Summer of 1964. We've been talking this month about the summer of 94, 20 years ago. Tomorrow, we go back 50 years, and we'll hear the story behind one of the most successful groups of that year and that decade, the Supremes. Also, how the Martha and the Vandellas song, Dancing in the Streets, took on new meaning during the Civil Rights Movement. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.